Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. Today we'll talk about what you need to know to be more economically secure in retirement. People are living longer today. Experts expect we'll spend about 20 to 30 years in retirement. At the same time, there are fewer pensions available through work. Many people expect that Social Security will be enough to take care of them, but the reality for most people is that Social Security will not be enough on its own to provide financial security. Most of us will need to provide for our own retirement needs through savings and investments. Having enough money in retirement is particularly challenging for women. Women tend to earn less than men, take time out to work from work to raise children, and care for sick family members or elderly parents, all of which reduces income and reduces the amount that we get paid in Social Security payments. Women also then have less money to buy a home or other investments which could help us build wealth. How much money do we need for a secure retirement? How many people facing retirement have what we need? Is there a train wreck coming as more baby boomers retire without sufficient funds to live on? And what can you do to increase your financial security? Our guest today to answer these and other questions is a national leader in economic security. Cindy Hounsell is the president of WISER, the Women's Institute for Secure Retirement, a nonprofit organization that improves opportunities for women to secure retirement income and that educates the public about inequities that disadvantage women in retirement. An attorney and retirement expert, Ms. Hounsell has been widely quoted in media such as the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, Boston Globe, USA Today, and Newsweek. You also may have seen her on ABC, CBS, CNN, CNBC, or PBS. We are fortunate to have her with us today. Cindy Hounsell, welcome back to All Together Now.
Thanks, Eleanor. That was quite a daunting introduction.
Yeah, you've got your syllabus laid out now. Here's what we need to know, but I know that's a lot. Well, we have an hour, so let's kind of dive right into it. So we know that people are living longer, and is there such a thing, like, do we know how much money, how do we figure out how much money we need for a secure retirement?
Well, I mean, that's one of the issues that I think prevent people from getting started unless they have access to good financial planning, which, you know, is the optimal solution here. If you have any idea, you know, of where to find that, you know, from either friends or relatives or through your workplace, then, the idea is to take advantage of everything you can. Because this is, it's not easy. I mean, you can make it easy and you can just start saving every penny you can lay your hands on from the time you're 21. And that should, that should help you move toward a secure retirement. But, most people have different issues. And so, it's not like you and I can sit here and say, oh, well, this is how much you need. I don't know, do you own your home? Will you own your home? Are you married? You know, all these different factors sort of come into play. And so, you need to be thinking about what you're living on today and will you, be able to live on that, 30 years from now or 40 years from now, or whenever it is that you'll retire. And that's really the game, is that how much money are you living on today? And I've been doing my own little research poll for the last since the end of January when the paycheck came out with the new tax rates. And yep. I've been asking a number younger, older, how are you doing with the new, the new tax plan? And, surprisingly myself, I have more money in my paycheck, and that's good. And I can't find one other person that paid attention to this, which is just astonishing to me.
Yeah.
Right. That, and that's, the first problem there, right? Is, you know,
yeah.
What are you doing with your financials? And I think, you know, there are a lot of women that, you know, are living penny to penny, who have kids, and, you know, they would notice if there's not anything, you know, anything extra coming out of their paycheck. But I think, you know, that's the first step for the, you know, whatever the average person is. You need to know what you're living on today. You need to have a budget, and you need to know that you're saving enough so that you can live on that future paycheck, whatever you're going to make that paycheck look like, because nobody else is going to, you know, provide you with funding. I mean,
right.
There are no more pensions coming back, as you mentioned, and, you know, Social Security benefits, you know, that's a worrisome, you know, whether they'll, you know, be cuts to that or, you know, what will happen. And so it's hard for people to plan with that looming ahead, you know, with the stories one hears. But, you know, it's just hard to know.
Right. It is hard to know. And then sometimes we have some people out there saying, well, yes, if you, you know, in order to retire and be secure, you need $1.3 million, because if you're drawing down at whatever it is, 4 or 5% a year out of what you've got, then, you know, you could live off of pretty much off of the money that's made if you have it in the stock market. But for most people, you say, well, what you need is $1.3 million. They'll go like, see you later, total shutdown, no
right.
way, not happening, no how. And it's just, and then you don't kind of look at it at all because it's too intimidating.
Right. But I think, look, most people know where their money is going. I mean, they may think they don't, but if you ask somebody, well, what bills do you pay every month? They'll tell you a car bill, a mortgage, a, you know, kid's tuition, I don't know, you know, they pretty much can narrow it down. And that's what you're going to have to do for the future. If you're living on, I'm saying this just as a hypothetical, if you're living on $30,000 a year, you know, will you be able to live on $30,000 the year that you'll retire, whenever that is? And there are plenty of calculators that are really helpful that you can put in your, you know, your the amount of money you earn today, and they'll do it for you, and it'll come up with a number, and you can plan on dying earlier, you know, to make the numbers work, you know, so that if you die at 59, you know, then you have enough money for retirement, you know, because you're dying before you retire. So, but you know, they all do that. They allow you to sort of play around with the numbers, and I think that's what people need to do. And those are not perfectly accurate either, but they give you a pretty good sense of where you are.
Yes, good.
So that's the first step one could take is to sit down and just pay attention to what you have and what you will have, and do it immediately.
Right. Good. And, you know, I just this week talked to a very good friend of mine who's kind of approaching retirement. And she said she recently asked her husband, will I outlive our money? And I was really surprised, because this is someone, you know, college educated, has been a professional woman her whole life. I was really amazed that she wasn't like more on top of it herself. And I was scared that she was so dependent on her husband for the knowledge about the finances. But I think that's probably true for many women. Now, I know there's lots of single women by choice or by divorce or whatever. But where there is, you know, a man on the scene, a spouse or partner, that often the man controls the finances and the women aren't much involved. Yet it's likely that the women are going to outlive the men. And we need to know how to deal with these issues. How prevalent do you think that still is, that women kind of rely on the men to do it? And what does a woman need to know about her finances in case there isn't someone around to help her?
Well, you need to know where everything is. And you need to know what you have. I mean, I have a good friend, and she relayed a conversation that was exactly the same as you.
Oh, really?
And,
okay.
Yeah. And yeah, so I don't think it's unusual. And I think, you know, for a lot of people, it's, you know, I take it as the attitude that, you know, the women are doing all sorts of other things. And so they think, well, let him take care of that, except that's the most important thing. You know, that's going to affect your life. So, you know, let them, you know, cook twice a week or something while you, you know, you can pay attention to that. But this person had told me, you know, that one of the things she made sure she was doing while she was working, and she had been a stay-at-home mom but went back to work when her kids started, her youngest started high school. And, you know, she made a pretty good salary. She was doing high-end real estate, and, she made it her goal to just pay off the house. And then she has just found out that he took out, you know, $250,000 mortgage on that paid-off house.
Oh, my God.
I know. And, you know, obviously they need it. I mean, you know, he didn't go buy, you know, a boat or do something without her. The point is, you know, she has no idea of what all these finances are doing.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's a big mistake.
So. Right. And do you think that's still pretty prevalent?
I do.
Women relying on men?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of married women just think... I could tell you, I will use the rest of the hour just to tell those stories. I just think it happens a lot. People make deals with their kids that they don't want the other person to know about, you know.
Wow.
It just goes, yeah. And so, you know, it happens a lot. And I think that's the big reason why people often don't make these good plans. And then something happens, and usually, you know, it's the male who dies first. You know, at least 2/3 of the women end up alone in married couples. And so they, you know, they're there trying to figure it all out at the worst possible time, right? Because you're grieving. And often it's unexpected. And all of a sudden you have to deal with all sorts of things. And those are the stories, you know, the stories I've been hearing for almost 30 years are pretty much the same. It's not that it's unusual at all.
Wow, yeah, and now that you're saying that, I have a friend who her husband just, you know, they worked together to get married for decades, had 3 children, and then all of a sudden he just died suddenly of a heart attack, and he had done all of the finances in the family, and she was like, what do I do now? And so let's take a minute to talk about that, since that's a big issue for women. For women who are kind of in a partnership now and they're relying on the man to take care of the finances for them, what should be the things that they should be learning about, like right now while they, you know, while the fellow is still there and able to kind of help them talk it through?
Right. Well, I mean, I think one of the good things you can do is you can go, you know, annually and talk to someone and have a plan. And if the you know, the male or the spouse is already doing that or whichever. And sometimes, you know, I meet women in the financial world and they say that their husband barely knows how to do anything. So it's the same thing. You know, people attract each other, somebody who doesn't want to do it, I think. I think, you know, especially if it's the way we're just talking here, is that, you know, you go to a financial planner, you find out where the money is, you find out how it's being invested, and that part really isn't, I mean, is there a pension, are there IRAs, you know, did the person, you know, did both parties work, you know, what did they have from those retirement plans, and if not, and then where is that extra, you know, money coming from, you know, that big group of assets that are in those IRAs that are going to support you throughout, you know, into your 90s, because that is one of the issues that, you know, over and over again you see in the research, and especially with the Society of Actuaries has done a lot of work around this, is couples not planning. Like at 65, you know, they sort of, you know, think, well, we have enough money, we're paying the bills, it's all good here, but you're not preparing for way down the road, and that's really what this is all about. I mean, that's where those numbers of 1.3 million come in, because it includes everything you could be spending money on, you know, Medicare premiums, supplemental health care premiums. You know, you do that for 35 years for two people, it adds up. And so, you know, you can look and see why those numbers become so frightening. But I think, you know, that's the important thing to be thinking about, because for so many people, it comes as a surprise, and it's the worst possible thing. And even, you know, over and over again, I hear stories, too, about second marriages, you know, people that come together, and then, you know, they're living, you know, they're sort of forgetting how they're, you know, what the budget is or what they're living on, and he passes away first, and, you know, she's left with having to sell the house because he had a pension that, you know, she doesn't get any part of. And, you know, maybe she, because she married at the wrong time or something, so she's getting, if she's lucky, she's getting his Social Security, but that may be all that she's living on. And so, you know, it can happen to anyone for any different group of, you know, factors here. And so it's the sitting down with someone, and you don't have to do that every week. I mean, but you need to know the basics and where this money is coming from. I mean, it's often such a surprise, you know, and I just begin to roll my eyes and think, well, you know, you're not getting any part of the pension. Why is that a surprise? You know, why wouldn't you want to know that?
Right. Well, I think that's a big issue, and I think the other thing too is the idea that, say, if the fellow has the bank account in his name, savings and checking account is in his name, and then he dies suddenly, well, you don't automatically get access to that, is my understanding, that unless your name is on that account, it kind of goes into his estate and then is determined by probate, even if you're married. Is that true?
Well, I mean, it depends on the specific issues, but yes, that could happen.
Yeah, so you don't want to get locked out. In fact, a similar thing happened just this past month. A very good friend of mine had been married for many decades, wonderful couple, and the husband died unexpectedly, and then now all of a sudden it's like there's a credit card that she used to be able to use, and now it's like she's frozen out.
Right.
And it's like, oh my God, just like everything, just even like she was parking her car to come visit me, and she couldn't use the automatic like dial in to Park DC because that credit card was frozen. And so every little thing she was trying to do, she just was kind of bumping up against it. What are some of the practical things like that that women should be paying attention to now in terms of bank accounts, in terms of credit cards, to make sure if something suddenly happened and their husband wasn't there anymore, what they would be able, you know, so they would be able to function?
Sure. Well, I mean, that's why you need to know where the money is and, you know, where it's coming from and what will still be there. And I think, you know, looking into that very seriously, because until you do that, you're likely to get caught, and then making sure that you have a credit card in your own name. You know, that, I mean, I've talked to women who've ended up, you know, getting divorced and then have to get all their utilities in because they're in their spouse's name. I don't think that usually happens with widows, but divorce is a whole different thing. So, you know, you need to make sure you have a credit card in your own name. And, you know, you're right, a lot of women don't do that either. You know, people start to consolidate as they get older and think, well, we don't need this or we don't need that, and I already have this, and we can get one for you. I mean, you know, it's not like it's a plot or anything. It's just not being prepared for the unexpected.
Right, exactly. And that was one of the things, you know, that my husband and I do is, like, on our bank accounts that we both jointly have them. It's in both our names. So if anything happens to one of us, the other one has continuous access, and we're not kind of locked out of those accounts.
Right.
So there's some simple things like that we can do.
Right. And then, you know, having a lawyer, having a will, you know, taking care of all of those things. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, in the financial world, there's a lot of talk about retirement readiness and financial wellness. And, you know, these are sort of the buzzwords. And, you know, considering, you know, what those things are, you know, that you need to know to really have a secure retirement. And, you know, the things that we see all the time are what I talked about at the beginning, is not really considering, you know, what amount of money are you going to need every year? I mean, just for the basics. And, you know, and so there are these old rules of thumb, you know, that used to say 75%, but those are pretty much, you know, and that also depends, I guess, if you had no bills and you had 75% of what your income was, you know, and you had a car that was brand new and paid for and your house is paid for and all of that, you know, you have a pension, then, you know, then maybe you can live off of 75% of, you know, what you're currently earning now. But, you know, it depends on you, and nobody can just give you these formulas because, you know, they may not work for you. You need to find that out yourself. And as I said, there are plenty of these, you know, these sites, that these good retirement calculators that can help you sort of get the basics, and then you can go for more help. And you need to do that at least once. You need to have a plan and sit down with someone who can go through what you have and tell you what you need to do. Even if you decide not to take all of that advice, you need that. And you can often get that from lawyers, too. I mean, doing a will, I happen to have a lawyer who can do all of that. I mean, you know, who can sit down and say, you know, have you considered, you know, like the cost of a Medicare premium, you know, what that costs every month. And so, you know, there's so many things that people just don't think about until, you know, often
faced
too
with
late.
It. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that thing, I know people used to talk about, plan on has 75% of what you currently spend is what you're going to need as you get older, because you're not going to be maybe out, you know, maybe not traveling as much, or maybe not spending so much on meals if you're, you know, working and buy lunch out, that kind of thing. But actually, I think you're right, that's changing now. There's saying, well, no, you really should plan on 100% of what you're spending now is what you're going to need, because actually you'll have more expenses, or you'll have different kinds of expenses that will show up when you're retired, precisely because you have more time. Maybe you'll travel more than you did before. And one thing we know for sure is, as we age, people have more medical costs for their health issues, and that can be a big surprise that people don't plan on how much the health care will cost them. So you mentioned the most important thing is sitting down with an advisor, maybe a lawyer, once a year. How do we find an advisor that we can trust, you know, particularly after the financial institutions and, you know, the greed and corruption we've seen over the past 10 years since the Great Recession and the various problems. And we got all these people out there trying to sell us this and sell us that. How do we find someone we can trust who can help us think through kind of what are our assets and what should we be planning for?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's like finding a doctor. You ask people, and, you know, you look around and see who's available. And, you know, there are a lot of good people out there doing, you know, helping people and doing it for a long time, and you know, getting their, you know, their paycheck from actually being successful for clients. So, you know, they want that too. It's just that I think where there used to be so little information, now there's a friend of mine was telling me he was looking for one of these, you know, retirement checklists for his elderly parents. He wanted to make sure they had, you know, all the boxes were checked off correctly, and there were over 7 million of these checklists when he went online, and he's,
oh, you know, my God,
he's an expert. He said I could take half and he'd take the other half, and we could decide which were the better ones. But anyway, find something, you know, go through the basics and know a little bit, so that when you go talk to that financial planner or the lawyer who's going to do your will, because most, you know, a lot of people do not have wills, you know. Large percentage of the population does not have a will. And the people especially with, you know, complicated issues especially need, you know, children, second marriages, all those things need to make sure that they have a will and that it's all taken care of. And the beneficiaries, you know, are named, you know, as the people that you want to receive whatever the benefit is. So I think, you know, finding that, asking people, looking around, you know, the following year you can go to somebody different if you don't like that particular person. But I think getting that information in order, and usually they'll give you, you know, a list of all the things that you need to get together. And I think that's very, very helpful. You know, the deeds to your property, you know, all those things that if something happened, you know, you'd need to have all these things.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's interesting. I years ago decided to just take more charge of my own finances here and tried to get on top of it. It was a fair amount of work, but once I did it, I felt so much better when I knew, you know, what are my assets, where are they, and yep. I got so into it. I was like, not only do I do the annual planning once a year, but I do a monthly sheet, which I put on an Excel spreadsheet, and it has the set assets now. I've figured it out. It's just that here's the set assets, and I just put, okay, for January, here's where I stand on that bank account or this IRA fund. Here's mm-hmm. what it is. Boom. And now I'm tracking it month by month. It's almost like I turn it into a game, but it's a game, you know, that it's fun to do. And it's great to see kind of, you know, it gives me more confidence and security that I know exactly where I stand.
Yeah, no, I think that's terrific. I just think we'd have a lot of trouble getting people to play that game with you.
Right. Off of themselves.
I mean, you either have to really want to do that. But, you know, just at least knowing and having that conversation with the person that you're relying on or who's relying on you, I think is really important, and having all the information in one place so that, you know. But, you know, the other big thing that I think people don't, as I said, the Society of Actuaries has done a lot of work on this since, you know, they project out, you know, out many years, you know, on longevity and, you know, how much money you need to live, you know, long lives. And, you know, people just don't deal with inflation at all. And so that's especially a big issue for women who live longer than men do, and they usually live, you know, with less money, and by the time they're much older, they're, you know, they're near poor, and that's like a very high number of women by age 85 are, you know, living on the brink of poverty, and, you know, they have a lot of, you know, health issues and chronic illnesses that are expensive with large out-of-pocket costs.
And we know women are living longer now, sometimes much longer. You know, you could live to be 90 or 100 even. And the centenarians are a fast-growing part of the population. But just because we're living longer doesn't mean we keep the quality of life we had. It's just like, you know, you're aging, and you have health issues, so we want to make sure that we have enough funds available to take care of ourselves when we hit that point. You mentioned that you've got a retirement readiness list that you use, and I know you've shared with us some of that, but what else is on your list there? We know we want to meet with an advisor once a year, you know, and meet with a lawyer and get a will. What else is on that?
Well, the other issues are your plan for long-term care. Since Medicare doesn't pay for, you know, extended nursing home care, and so, you know, there are lots of different options, you know, that you can consider, and that's you know, that's important because even if you don't have long-term care insurance, the traditional policy. There are other things that you can do. There are, you know, different versions of this, shorter term policies. So you can look into that and see what's out there and see if you want to do that. Or you can at least have a plan of where you would go to get help in your area. You know, like where do you find the geriatric manager? Where do you find, the area agency on aging, the people that manage the programs that can help you find funds if you're eligible for anything, where you can really get all of that help. And so I think just knowing that helps people feel more secure.
Well, that's a new one on me. What is the geriatric manager?
Well, it would be someone, I mean, people use them frequently, and there are a number of them in this area here, the Washington, D.C. area, who will help you find what you need, maybe for an elderly parent, we'll use that example, or, you know, could be a spouse who's had some illness and needs to go to an assisted living, maybe not, you know, for the rest of their lives, but for a period of time, and they can help. They know these places. They know how to get in. They know all the ins and outs. And so finding that type of help or knowing that it exists, that's, you know, so often you hear about people that, oh, it took me 2 months to find, you know, a place for my mom, for this and that, and you look and you say, well, what about calling the elder care locator, you know, in your area? The what? The elder care locator, you know. These are government programs that actually help you find the services that you will need for the particular problem that you're up against. So I think aside from the long-term care, that's a good thing. If you have that and you've taken care of all that and you've afforded it at the right time, that's all good. But you need some other, if you don't have that, which, you know, most people, I think only 10% of, you know, the population has long-term care insurance. So you need to have some other kind of a plan. Where would I just go for help if I needed it? You know, somebody could, your aunt could come visit you and have a stroke in your house. What would you do? Where would you go? And so I think once we start getting toward those ages, you need to know about all those resources.
That's really great. I wish I had known about that. I was helping my father as he was getting on in years. He had advanced diabetes and lived down in Florida, so I was trying to help him kind of manage his finances, manage his care. And, you know, trying to do that from a distance is highly stressful.
Right.
And, you know, really nothing about Florida, and just trying to research it. And like you say, you know, you look online and you talk to people. But if I had known, really what I have to do is find a geriatric manager, you know, find the person who is in that place already, in this case Florida, who can tell me what I need to know about assisted living facilities and doctors and so forth,
right,
that would have been so much easier.
Right. And as I said, the elder care locator is, you know, an excellent example of that, because it's a government program run by the Administration on Aging and, you know, has all of those options, you know, available in your particular area, wherever you're calling. So I think, you know, it's important for people to just keep that, so that you're not starting from scratch, not even knowing, where do I go, what do I do? I don't know anything about this. So I think it's really helpful to have all that information. And, you know, libraries have it, senior centers have it. I mean, almost anybody should have that stuck in the folder with the will, right? Because you just don't know when these circumstances are going to come up. I mean, if you're 25, you're not thinking about any of this. Not an issue. But, you know, if you're getting close to retirement, the traditional retirement age of 65, 66, then, you know, you need to know about these things.
Right. Absolutely. Well, this is good. I'm learning as you're talking. I appreciate all of that. And you've got your whole organization, WISER, which is specifically about helping women prepare for retirement. What are some of the kinds of things that your organization does to address this issue of increased economic security in retirement?
Well, I mean, we do a lot of financial education, and we try to, you know, educate the policymakers as well about the issues that people are experiencing. And, you know, people just are not aware of a lot of the issues, and especially for women. And so I like to say that all the time, that, you know, it's, if you ever walk into a nursing home, you'll understand why we focus on women. It's mm-hmm. all those women who often are alone at, you know, much older ages. And, you know, many people in their family may be gone. You know, people all don't survive. And, you know, we don't have the same circle of friends at 65 that you would have at 95, you know, or the people around you through no fault of your own. People just are gone. And so it's getting people that information and the help and, you know, the helping them deal with the isolation of all of it, and caregivers, especially. We do a lot of work with caregivers and the financial issues for caregivers, because many of the children of these elderly people are paying for the assisted living or the nursing home, and they can't afford it either, you know, to their own detriment. They're uh-huh. not saving for their own retirement because of that. And then, you know, in the situation you were talking about with your father, you know, they're all also wonderful. There's a wonderful organization, and they're, you know, they meet here frequently. Their national organization, the Daily Money Managers, who can, you know, can also help with, you know, taking care of the money and the save, you know, making sure that you're not running out and that the bills are being paid and all that for people that are on their own. So who may not have children, you know, who can help them.
So okay, so this is another kind of support for people as we get older, is a daily money manager. That's another yep. new one for me. So yep. they help you with your finances? Is that
right.
the idea? Make sure
yep.
your bills get paid on time?
Yep, all of that.
Okay, and then...
And there are associations. I mean, you know, it's a pretty big network. But it's true, they're not so well known. I mean, if you know about them, you know about them. But, you know, a lot of people don't until they come up against it. And then someone may say, well, here's a way you could handle that.
Yeah. Good. Well, I appreciate all the good work that you're doing there. And you also you talk about the things that people need to know, kind of the three main sources of income in retirement, often the Social Security, pension, and then any kind of savings or assets that you've got. But,
right.
Pensions are kind of gone by the wayside. Very few young people are going to be getting a pension, and not even that many in middle age right now
right.
are going to have a pension. That's really a shrinking income stream. And people think, oh, well, that's what Social Security is for. It's to make sure that, you know, I'm not going to be poor when I get older. But actually, that was originally, Social Security was just meant as, you know, supplemental to the pension and to the savings. But now people are thinking of it as, well, that's really what I need, but it's nowhere close to what a person needs to live on. Is that right? Or what do you say to someone who says, well, I'm not worried about retirement, I've got my Social Security coming?
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody says that anymore.
Oh, you don't? Okay, good.
No, I think the one thing that, you know, over the last 20-something years that I can say that we helped with this is that everybody's worried, pretty much, you know, or a lot of people are worried. So, you know, you do these surveys of women and, you know, people, and, you know, one of the top worries is retirement, having enough money or running out of money for retirement. People really do feel that way. I mean, they may be worried about the state of Social Security, you know, and being there for them, mm-hmm. because it's a pretty important source of income for many people. And a lot of times what people have done is, until they get more middle-aged, they sort of underestimate, you know, the importance of Social Security and think like, well, you know, I'm going to I don't know, I guess I'll be fine. They don't even know where the money's coming from. And then, you know, as it gets, as they start learning a little bit more, realize, boy, they need that Social Security. And, you know, often that's one of the mistakes people make. They take it too soon, you know, because they think they need it tomorrow. So they'll take it at age 62 rather than taking it at age, the full retirement age, or even trying to wait until age 70 to take it, because then you get a much larger benefit. At least that's the way the system works today. So, you know, you get 8% for every year that you wait after full retirement age. And that's a considerable amount of money. A guaranteed 8%, you know, isn't easy to come by, even in the stock market that's, you know, been going up and up.
Right.
So I think, you know, one of my longtime platitudes here is know the systems that you rely on. And if that system is your spouse, you better know that spouse and what they're doing too. So, you know what's happening from Social Security, know what you're going to get from your employer, what your spouse is getting from an employer, and know where your savings are and know what the fees are, you know.
Right, exactly. Well, and just to clarify that for our listeners who may not know, that when you are looking at Social Security, it's not like there's a set figure that, you know, you could start taking it at 62, but then that's going to be less money. And then the longer you wait, the more your monthly check is going to be from Social Security, and it will keep rising every year up until age 70.
Right.
So that's the advantage of waiting, as you're recommending, is wait really probably as long as you can, because as that increases at 8% a year, once you cap it, say you decide to take it at age 70, then that's what you're going to get for the rest of your life.
Right.
So if you take it too early, like you take it at age 62, even though you're eligible for it, you're leaving a lot of money on the table, and you're settling for a lower monthly Social Security check for the rest of your life. So if you can wait, it's almost always better to wait until you're 70 to take that Social Security payment.
Right. Especially if you don't have enough money saved for retirement. I mean, you know, you want to maximize your benefit as best you can. I think that's the most, you know, that's important. And then the, you know, the other thing that people can do all along, I mean, I know we've made it sound pretty sad, but I think while you're working, there are so many different ways that you can maybe take advantage of company benefits that you're not even aware of. Like a lot of companies now are having new programs with voluntary benefits. Like they're not, you know, they don't pay for every single thing or offer it among your regular benefits package, but they offer voluntary benefits like cancer insurance and, you know, all sorts of things, things that, you know, for children, et cetera. And so those things, you may be paying for them yourself, but because you're part of a group, they're much, you know, first of all, they're accessible, because usually for one person you can't go get a voluntary benefit. But you can, you know, you can find dental insurance, or you can find benefits that you wouldn't be able to find on your own. And so I think it's exploring all of that, making sure you take advantage all through your working life. And, you know, a lot of these millennials are now working gig jobs, so they don't have access to traditional benefits, but they can get these voluntary benefits, like through employers. That's, you know, becoming more and more popular. So,
yeah, well, that's encouraging. And, yeah, and I know a few years back, and there was someone I knew who was trying to sell me long-term care insurance, someone who actually liked kind of a friend. And I was thinking, oh, my God, that's like a big check, whatever it was, $3,000 a year for long-term care insurance. So, well, this is a lot of money for me, and that's kind of out of pocket, and it's every year for as long as you know, I live. And thought, well, why don't I just put that money in an investment somewhere, a stock market or something? And then I talked to actually a very good friend who sells life insurance and long-term care, and she said, Eleanor, you know, I encourage all my clients to buy long-term care insurance, and I tell them when they write the check, I hope you never need this. I hope,
right.
You know, this is where, but if you do fall, if you do have an injury to a hip or you have some kind of illness as you get older, the expense of care, if you're in for a few months for, you know, medical care, for rehab, you want that long-term care to help cover that expense. Otherwise, you could actually become bankrupt from one illness.
Right.
So
right.
That it's a good idea to have that long-term care insurance. So now, what about annuities? That's kind of another instrument that some of the companies have come up with. That is, the idea is you put in a chunk of money up front, and then it gives you a guaranteed income every year. Do you think annuities are a good idea to help supplement income as we retire?
I do. I do, and I think, you know, the trick there is which one you buy and how you buy it. And, you know, do you buy it earlier or later? And, you know, I think for women, you know, buying it later, you know, in your 70s, and then you're not caught if the market, you know, goes way down. You know, you preserve your principal. And, you know, it's a good way to cover expenses that you know will need to be covered and won't be covered by your Social Security. So I'm a fan, but as I said, I think it's all in where you buy them, who you buy them from.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And so I think it's, you know, it's another one of those issues, like talking to financial planners, comparing, you know, products and things are really important. We have actually on our website, we have a lifetime income calculator, and you can put in, it only asks you four very simple questions, you know, how old you are, when you want to retire, and then, you know, do you need a monthly amount? And so if you thought, well, I need, you know, $2,000 to, you know, to pay all my bills aside from Social Security, you know, how much of an annuity would I need to buy? And it gives you up to the moment, like stock market pricing. It's a pro bono service that an annuity platform we know, you know, has provided us with access to. And so it also helps people figure out how much, you know, getting $2,000 a month, you know, for the rest of your life, because you put in, you know, your age, and it figures that all out through the algorithms and all of that. And I have a friend who has a union pension, and she was complaining all the time about, you know, this union pension. So I did the math for her, and I showed her that was $3,700 a month, I think, that she was getting. And for her to buy an annuity to replace $3,700 a month for the rest of her life would have been $670,000. So she's much more appreciative of her of her pension.
That's great.
But well, it also, you know, it just helps you sort of put into context. I mean, you know, that this is what I could get for, you know, this is for a single life annuity. And it just, you know, is one of the reasons that a lot of people don't buy annuities, is because they don't want to keep that money locked up. They think, you know, what if something happens tomorrow and I need more of my money than, you know, what I just signed up for to get on a monthly basis. So it's, you know, it's complicated, and often, you know, there's discussion here among pension experts and retirement experts on, you know, getting more defined contribution plans like 401ks to offer these, you know, at a group rate. And so you would get a monthly benefit just like you would if you'd had a normal traditional pension, be able to buy it through the employer, you know, at a special rate. So
that would be good.
Yep, and that may come, you know, more. I mean, some employers do offer it and have changed their retirement plans to sort of, you know, make that possible for people, because, you know, it is complicated. But as I say, it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned your website. I just want our listeners to know you've got a fabulous website. It's wiser.org, W-I-S-E-R.
Wiserwomen.org.
Wiserwomen.org.
Yes.
So it's a great resource to go, wiserwomen.org, to find out more information about what you mentioned and all the other resources that you've got up there. We've been talking about kind of individually what we can do, just kind of thinking a little bigger picture right now in terms of the society that we now have. The current Congress and Trump just gave a huge tax bonanza to the very wealthy, which is putting pressure now for Congress to cut parts of the federal spending in order to pay for the tax cuts to the super wealthy. How concerned are you about coming cuts or attempts to cut Social Security and Medicare?
I mean, I think it's a, you know, it's a real issue, and I think the only way that's going to make a change or prevent that from happening is for people to speak out, because it isn't, I mean, the economy also survives on the money that is spent by the elderly. That's always been true, right? And if the elderly have no money to spend, then, you know, it's going to affect everyone. So I think, you know, people need to fight for those benefits and not just throw their hands up in the air and say, you know, we can't do anything about it. So.
I think that's right. I'm looking at the young students now coming out of high school from Parkland, Florida, and all across the country that are flooding to the state houses, and even they're flooding in Congress today as we speak to call for gun control and regulating guns so they're less of a public health and public safety threat. Now, I could see, you know, if there are serious attempts to cut Social Security and Medicare, that we get the seniors all flooding the streets and, you know, kind of doing the same thing, just going, well, you can't take this away. We've done our planning. And, in fact, with Social Security, we've been paying into that our whole lives to create a fund. So there's money there as we retire and get older. So, you know, hopefully people will stand up and defend that. So is we just have a couple of minutes left, Cindy. Is there anything else you wanted to say to our listeners in terms of what can they do in terms of improving their retirement readiness?
Well, I mean, I think I've sort of planning is the, you know, the biggest issue, and knowing what you have. The other, before we end the policy discussion here, I will say that there are, you know, there's a lot of discussion internationally about giving benefits to people at age 80 and 85, you know, increasing their Social Security, or, you know, starting benefits like maybe a little less to begin with, and then, you know, having them grow when you need them most, when inflation has really reared its ugly head. And so I think those are things for people to think about, because many of us did not know that we were going to be living this long, you know, or that we might live 20 to 30 years. People, we didn't know that in our 20s. Today's generation knows that could happen. But, you know, this has all just evolved over the last 30, 40 years. And so a lot of people weren't prepared for such a long life. And I think realizing that you're going to live longer than you expected, or one of you in the couple, if not both, may well live into their 90s, means that you have to save a lot more, and you have to care about these issues much sooner.
Yeah, and in a way, it's kind of a happy problem to have. It's like, oh, good news, you're not going to die at 80. You probably will live to 90. Someone just showed me a statistic saying if you're in a couple where you're both 65 years of age, that the likelihood that one of you will live to 90 is something like 50%.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
That people are, if you know, if you've made it to 65 and you're kind of staying healthy, you got a shot at, you know, getting up there to 90. So we're living longer and need to be doing that financial planning. So we, so as my friend said, you know, we won't run out of money while we're still here. We want to make sure while we're still alive, we still have money to pay the bills and live a life of dignity. And I want to thank you so very much, Cindy, for the great work you do at Wiser and helping make sure that people, particularly women, can continue to live lives of dignity no matter how long we may be on this planet. So thank you so very much.
Well, thank you for having us and for, you know, making this an issue that people can hear and talk about.
Right, thank exactly. You. And for our listeners, please don't be afraid. That's, I think, a big block for some people. Like, oh, my God, you know, this is tough. Really think of it as an exciting opportunity to, you know, kind of take command of the finances in your life and plan to have the life that you want, that you get the money so that you can live the life you want to live as you're here. So that website, again, is wiserwomen.org for more information. That's all the time we have. Cindy Hounsell, thank you so very much for being with us today and for all your important work for the dignity of people and particularly women as we age.
Thanks, Eleanor.